All right, Caleb Joseph, the first rule of Blue Jays talk, and I got this from the man himself. When I said, now, Barker, would you mind if Caleb sits in for you? Quote, go for it. Tell him no khaki bleep. there you go. No khaki bleep allowed. After a Jays game, there was a whole lot of baseball here. 4-2 loss to the Orioles. Austin Hayes with a game-saving grab. But, Caleb, the talking point, and we will monitor John Schneider, the Blue Jays manager, for this. The talking point clearly in the third inning. Bo Bichette leaving the game after pulling up lame after a pretty hard turn at first base. Look, one thing we know about Bo, he doesn't like to not play.
Right.
Very seldom does he show any sort of wincing, but man, it's his right knee. The Jays are calling it knee discomfort. I mean, we've all seen enough sports, and I think I don't want to jump to conclusions here, but our initial reaction was, ugh.
Yeah, never good to see a player kind of stop in mid tracks, and he. Just as Bo Bichette can do, he lines that ball to right field. He's thinking two out of the gate. He actually makes the right decision and starts to pull up. And when you've got all your momentum going towards second base and you try and stop, sometimes the cleat gets caught and it just starts to mess a bunch of stuff up there in the knee. And, yes, the good thing about this, Jeff, is that he was able to walk on it.
He didn't collapse.
Yes. I have seen guys that have totally blown out and they have to be, you know, their leg is put into a brace. They have to be carted off the field. That's no bueno. But the fact that he walked off, that's at least a good sign in my opinion.
We will await John Schneider's post-game availability and find out the status of Bo Bichette. Meanwhile, it is, of course, that time of year. Major League Baseball's trade deadline is tomorrow at 6 o'clock Eastern time. The Jays acquiring Jordan Hicks from the St. Louis Cardinals yesterday. Jordan Hicks was up in the bullpen with the Jays threatening late in the game. And, you know, I think it's one of those things, Caleb. You go into the night, there's buzz about Jordan Hicks being here. Expectations that the Jays will likely make another move. Bo Bichette gets hurt. Then there's this comeback, and you see Jordan Hicks up, and you kind of – and Whit Merrifield hits a home run, and you kind of close your eyes, and you think, okay, this could go from storybook to nightmare to storybook awfully fast. But as we've seen with the Baltimore Orioles, man, Austin Hayes saves the game. Probably not the best night for Felix Bautista, certainly not for Yennier Cano. But this Orioles team knows how to win close games. They really do, and – it was apparent tonight, I thought, Caleb, from watching them. They're not afraid.
No panic.
Even when the Bautista and Cano were, it was kind of unraveling a bit, you did not get any sense of panic.
No panic. And I'll tell you where it started for me. It started behind the plate. Adley Rutschman in his, you know, second season, that's the time where the game can really start to kind of speed up. He was not sped up. The fielders weren't sped up. They're 20-10 in one-run games. And when you start to win one-run games, you're playing late into the game. You feel confident. You're going to be thrown all these different types of scenarios and situations. And when you win those games, it just there's a confidence that starts to breathe through the clubhouse. A couple teams I was on that did really well, we were really good in one-run games. And there's no panic. And there's no panic. And this was the night, in my opinion, to get to Cano, to get to Bautista. They were trying to give it up. They tried every possible way to give it up. They were bailed out, like you said, by Hayes in left field. And, you know, it just goes back to you've got to score early. You got to find a way with Kyle Gibson to put more balls in the air to have a better, more solid approach. They made a ton of outs on the ground. It looked to me like they were really looking heater when he threw primarily off-speed pitches. It's just about an approach. You got to find a way to get a lead early and hold it. But that was a night where the back end of the Orioles bullpen, they were trying to give it up. And Whit Merrifield did a good job hitting that line drive, but a good defensive play sometimes can win the game for you as well.
Yeah, lots to talk about. We've got to talk about Chris Bassitt as well, his performance, Whit Merrifield homering in the leadoff spot. The numbers to call, we want to open the lines to you, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. I want to go to Mark in Union Station because you're going to save me from having to talk about George Springer by asking about George Springer. This is perfect, Mark. We're on the same wavelength here.
Yeah, I just don't get it. $22.5 million this year. So I did the math. He's making about $139K sitting on the bench. Two big spots come up. We got Luplo coming in. And then we got Jansen in the ninth. George Springer's making too much money to be sitting on the bench, not in a division game. It's I don't get it.
I'm going to turn this over to Caleb. First thing I'm going to say, though, no, Mark, thank you for the call. First thing I'm going to say is, look, I'm a big believer in, and Russ Martin, when he was here, kind of forced me to come around to this thinking. He said, when you're an everyday player, and your manager gives you a day off, it should be a full day off. It should be a full day off. And, you know, and I mean, I remember looking at Russ when he said it. No, he said, guys I've played for, guys at the Yankees, guys at the Dodgers, and here, the same thing. Gibby was like that as well, man. A day off is a day off.
Yeah.
But I guess what's going to get the fans a little agitated is, one, well, first of all, George Springer's won for his last 39.
Right.
Two, or one for his last 37. The Jays have moved him out of the leadoff spot into the number five spot. Three, it is arguably the biggest series of the year against the team you're chasing. Now, I understand John Schneider said this was a scheduled day off. But then, and four, Bo Bichette goes down. You're short. Like, I was thinking at least pinch run him for Kirk.
Yep.
Now, unless there is a nagging injury that we don't know about, and that's entirely possible.
Sure.
But I knew, and Mark was a guy, I knew people were going to call up about that.
Absolutely. The worst thing you can have as a player is when you're told you are having a day off. I think he's played 19 consecutive days. My question is, has George Springer been on the IL this year? The answer is no. And so they've obviously done a good job of keeping him healthy. This is a guy with a track record that has some lengthy stays on the IL. They've got to have George Springer healthy. I'm not sure that John Schneider could have made the right decision tonight. If he puts him in there, then if he strikes out or something, why are you putting that guy in there? He's one for his last whatever. He's 0 for 19. You know, you put him in such a high-pressure spot. Give him a mental day off. Like, just let him relax. But if you don't put him in, then it's, why are you not putting in the highest-paid player? Well, the ebbs and flows of a season are really incredible, and just watching the ebb and flow of what's going on, I feel like the best thing that could happen for George is just to have a full day off, because the last thing you want to do is be told you have a full day off and then, oh, hey, can you pinch hit like right now? Yeah. And you're mentally, when you are told you have a day off, you're mentally out of it. That's the whole point, especially for a guy like George Springer who's going through a little bit of a scuffle. You want to mentally disengage from the game, and I guarantee he was doing that, and you don't want to try and pump that back into it. And he's got to get his body physically ready. This guy isn't 22. Like, he's got stuff he has to do to get ready. And if he was told at the very beginning, you are not playing, I guarantee you there was nothing outside of literally running out of players because of injury that was going to put him in that game.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. And I know for fans, you know, who see a Jordan Luplo come up in a pinch hit situation, I mean, I know what's going through your head. I understand how you feel. But again, I just really believe, and I think most people around the game do, that when you give an everyday player a day off, he gets a day off.
And there's your right-handed bench bat.
Yes.
That the Jays are kind of maybe looking for as we speak for that exact scenario.
James in Medicine Hat.
Jeff, Caleb, how's it going?
Good. Good, James. What's up, man? How are things in the hat?
Things are doing all right in the hat. It's hot here, but it's a desert.
That's true.
With the Bo Bichette injury tonight, I know they're obviously still gathering information. The game just ended, but is this something where maybe like a Tommy Edman, Tim Anderson promote within? Just kind of, if it's a bad case for Bo Bichette, what do you see as a replacement potentially coming in at the deadline tomorrow?
I mean, Caleb, you know, it's interesting. Thanks for the call. I know. We know that the Jays have talked to the White Sox about Tim Anderson before Bo's injury. Look, my, you know, the sort of the classic answer for this is, one, you're not going to replace Bo Bichette. You're just not. If he's out for a long period of time, you're not going to replace him. But there are, you know, some options, lesser options, Paul DeJong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's so few position players on the market right now, it seems, that it almost makes me think that in the next, whatever it is, 20, 21 hours or however long it is, it wouldn't surprise me if we see some moves, surprising moves made with core players on other teams. Having said that, though, you know, if you're the Jays, and again, let's wait and see what this Bo's status is. If you're the Jays, I almost think you take the approach, Caleb, that Bo's going to be back. Let's go out and do what we got to do. Now, the problem I have is this team is not very good with runners in scoring position, and I don't know if there's a guy out there you can add that instantly makes you better with runners in scoring position. You know, it's like, is that a measurable trait? I mean, statistically it's measurable, but I don't know if that guy is out there. I've kind of taken the approach of this team. I want to see Ross Atkins tomorrow. I want to see him do something that changes the composition of this team. I want to see fewer at-bats for Dalton Varsho, Kevin Biggio, and frankly, in Brandon Belt as well, even though I understand how Brandon Belt figures in here. I want to see a couple of bats in here that are going to take at-bats away from guys that haven't been producing this year.
Yeah, and the question is, where are those going to come from? I mean, I was a big believer that you add a guy like Bellinger, that could be a really big piece, yet the Cubs are now buying. Are the San Diego Padres, like, what are they going to do? What about the Mets? They're because of expanded playoffs, so many teams really feel like they've got a shot at doing stuff, and so there's not as many full-blown sellers. Replacing Bo Bichette is going to be virtually impossible at this point. Too many teams that are going for it have premium shortstops. You look at a guy like Tim Anderson, could he fit? Absolutely. What if Bichette is okay? And are you trying to cover for Bichette, or are you trying to really bolster, like you just said, kind of the augment some of those ABs? It's kind of now what seems to be, in a matter of 4 hours, there's now more options that they have to consider. Amazing how one play can kind of throw off their approach at the deadline.
This is John Schneider on Bo Bichette just a few seconds ago.
What do you know about Bo right now?
Right knee discomfort. We're still kind of, you know, gathering information to see what we're going to do next. Probably know more tomorrow.
And what was he able to tell you about it, what he was feeling, and are there any tests planned, do you know?
He said, you know, on the field coming off, he kind of jammed it a little bit when he was trying to stop. And with a guy like him, you want to be extremely proactive, obviously. But in terms of what's going forward, we'll know more tomorrow. We're still, you know, figuring that out right now.
So there you go. That's John Schneider talking about Bo Bichette, not even coming out and saying he's day-to-day. So clearly there are more tests to come. And you mentioned this in the telecast or on the broadcast, Caleb. The timing of getting the test and the trade deadline approaching. I don't know if you go out and replace Bo Bichette, but, you know, we saw the Jays move pretty aggressively to get Jordan Hicks when Jordan Romano went down. Now, I know Ross Atkins is saying we talked about the deal before it happened.
Sure.
But I guarantee you that it became a lot more urgent the second that Jordan Romano kind of tweaked his back and walked off. I just don't know where Ross Atkins, where he goes here. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. Situations like this quite often you see where there may be trades kind of percolating right now with the Jays, and they may have to recalibrate.
No doubt about it.
They may have to recalibrate because of this.
No doubt about it. In a matter, like we just said, in a matter of 3 hours, it just seems like things can start to get really sideways and haywire, and that's what you're trying to do at the deadline. You're trying to make sure you're covered on every base in terms of, if this happens, if a guy goes down, are we covered? Are we in good shape? Do we have insurance at the places we need? I'll be honest with you, I never once considered, what if a Bo Bichette goes down?
No.
Are we covered? I'm thinking starting pitching, I'm thinking relief, maybe a bench bat. Like, what can we do to maybe look at that right-handed bat off the bench? Not one time have I thought third base, shortstop, first base, these type of everyday positions, are they covered? And the picking is thin. And, I mean, is Nick Ahmed a guy maybe in Arizona? They're buying. They just traded for Paul Sewald, but he doesn't really play much. There's going to be a lot going on. This is going to be one of the most interesting 20 hours of a deadline. I think, man, phones are going to be charged and continually plugged in because I think there's going to be action all over the place trying to figure out what's going on with Bo. Because they have the capabilities to do x-ray stuff down underneath. Mm-hmm. They don't have the capability to do an MRI. Obviously, his knee is not broken. Otherwise, an x-ray would be able to show that. They're going to have to do an MRI. And when I've had MRIs as a player, you're going into a, I'm not going to say third party, you're going in just to a normal hospital.
Yeah.
And so last time I checked, normal hospitals don't really do MRIs at 10:30 at night. But this is kind of an extenuating circumstance. The Blue Jays need to know exactly where they're at, because if they got to pull the trigger on a trade, they've got hours to do this. This is fascinating.
Yeah, I'll tell you, my favorite MRI story when I covered the Montreal Expos, Yvonne Calderon, who is a big, big dude. Yvonne Calderon injured. This is an oblique, I believe. And he was so big they couldn't find an MRI to fit him in Montreal. They sent him down to Plattsburgh, New York.
Wow.
To the Air Force Base Medical Center there. Somebody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, and they got his MRI done right away. But, again, this is, you know, your initial reaction is to think the worst, obviously, when something like this happens. But, I hate to say this. I heard you guys talking about when I was walking up here from the press box. The team's been awfully lucky with injuries this year.
Absolutely.
Awfully lucky. You think of guys who've been hit by pitches just missing the forearm, just missing the hand.
Yep.
This team has been really, really lucky with injuries. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays have lost 4-2 to the Baltimore Orioles, the first of four games between these teams. Lots to talk about. I want to talk about Chris Bassitt's outing. And I also want to talk about something Caleb and Ben touched on during the broadcast as well. Because I think sometimes when we watch an umpire and we watch a blown call, we get mad at the umpire because he blew the call without really thinking, how does it change the at-bat? And we saw a couple of pitches tonight that fundamentally changed at-bats. We'll talk about that. It's Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
John, how do you evaluate your late-inning offense when there's two 99s off the plate that get two of your guys?
Good job of controlling the strike zone, and I don't think Felix Bautista needs any help.
That's a very tactful answer by John Gibbons, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Jeremy Riggs has had greater nights, or better nights, that's for sure. Oakland A's have just acquired. The A's making a run for it. No, I'm just kidding. The Oakland A's have acquired right-handed pitcher Chad Patrick from the Diamondbacks in exchange for infielder Jace Peterson in cash consideration. So there you go, Arizona making some moves. We've seen a lot of moves today. As we said, the trade deadline is 6 Eastern tomorrow. We'll see whether or not Bo Bichette's health status creates any added issues for Blue Jays general manager Ross Adkins. If you missed it, Bo Bichette left the game in the third inning after pulling up lame, rounding first base on a single, his second single of the second single of the night, as a matter of fact. And wouldn't you know it, Caleb Joseph, the final out of the game with two on was recorded by Santiago Espinal.
Right in his spot.
It is remarkable how that happens. 416-870-0590, *590. 888-666-0590. Caleb Joseph has very graciously agreed to hang in with me tonight and kind of walk us through this particular situation. Want to get to the out-of-town scoreboard in a minute, but first we've got to talk about Chris Bassitt. 113 pitches thrown, only 28 called strikes and whiffs. But, Caleb, after that 29-pitch first inning, it's funny, I say this about Kevin Gausman. Sometimes I'm more impressed with Kevin Gausman when he doesn't have his good stuff than I am when he has his good stuff. And tonight, you use the word grinding. That was a grind. We're actually, you watch a game like that, and you're grinding along with Chris Bassett, aren't you?
Absolutely. You're emotionally invested because he has a tendency to wear his emotions on his sleeves. You can tell when he just doesn't feel it, when he doesn't have it. A lot of pitches missing location. Location is the key for Bassett. It's all about hitting that location with what he's featuring. Once he does that, then he can start to expand. He can start to throw the slow stuff. The sinker's a big pitch for him. The cutter's a big pitch for him. You've heard Kevin Barker talk about that ad nauseum with Bassett. And for me, it's just this constant battle of getting the pitch on time, figuring out what sign it is that he wants to get, what he wants to throw, and allowing him to visualize that pitch, see the location, instead of, you're going to take it, Kirk. No, I'm going to call it. No, now I'm going to call it. No, now you're going to take it. I got it. You got it. Like, what is going on? I mean, this is at a point in the season where this should be totally buttoned up. But yeah, for some reason, it's a constant with Bassett that he's battling the pitch calling, and I think it's taken him out of his game.
I was under the impression that he turned it over to Kirk.
He does. He does. He does it for seven or eight pitches, and then he gets frustrated, and he shakes his head, and then he goes to his transmitter. It's constant. And if you really watch closely, I think a lot of his frustration is that he can't get that nice, good flow of the game. This is a veteran guy with eight pitches. These guys, they want to be able to see shape. They want to be able to see where they're trying to finish that pitch. And it's all about if-then statements. If I throw this pitch to that batter and he does this to it, then I'm going to throw that pitch in that location. And if it misses on this side of the plate, I'm then going to that other pitch. It's a complicated board of chess out there. And when he doesn't feel like he can just hand that over, I feel like it's taking away from his ability to locate. But like you said, what he did tonight, impressive. I'm more impressed with this outing than the complete game that he threw not too long ago. I think that when you're really, really battling not only the signs, but your location, your mechanics, he had B-minus stuff and he had C-minus location. And the fact that that game was within reach in the ninth inning is because Bassett just bulldogs his way through six innings, and it saves another inning from the bullpen, which is going to get taxed with a six-man rotation.
Yeah, and let's face it, he is now about the 15th Blue Jays pitcher in the last 3 years to not be able to figure out Ryan Mountcastle. He's got plenty of company. Ryan Mountcastle, two-run double and a sacrifice fly to right. I mean, he's a handful. We know that he likes playing in this park. We know that he likes playing against this team. You know, and again, this is what we talked a little bit between innings. If I'm Mike Elias, the Orioles general manager, I'm looking at a game like tonight where I get that play from Austin Hayes. You know, I got that type of performance from Kyle Gibson. I mean, if I can at all add a starting pitcher here to this team, a guy like a Justin Verlander, I've got to do it, because this team's frankly, look around the American League right now. Is there a better team than the Baltimore Orioles? I don't think so.
Great question. I think the team
to beat
in the AL, absolutely, in my opinion, is the Orioles. I feel like they just don't beat themselves. They've got kind of that playoff build to them in terms of a really good bullpen. They're good in one-run games. They remind me, Jeff, of the 14 and 15 Kansas City Royals. A bunch of no-name guys, really solid bullpen, but guys that can get up there and get a hit or two. They're good on the base pass. I mean, goodness, they scored two runs in the first inning because Anthony Santander made a really nice first to third play. Ryan O'Hearn moves up, and then that leads to the RB, the double by Mountcastle. They do a lot of really good things early in the game. They're starting pitching, gets them to that sixth inning. Once they get to the sixth, it's almost all but over. They've had to struggle scoring a ton of runs, but you don't have to score nine runs every night. If you play good defense, you run the bases, and you pitch well late in games, that's what they do. They're a tough team to beat.
Time now for the Major League Standings Watch, presented by Bet365. You can download the Bet365 app and check out the latest odds for today's baseball games. 19-plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. It was not a good night for the Toronto Blue Jays on several levels. But I'll tell you what, folks in the Bronx right now, they're trying to figure out just what the heck is going on with the Yankees. They lost 5-1 to Tampa Bay tonight. That's only part of the story. Domingo Germán was scratched from the start. Johnny Brito made the start, and in the fifth inning, Guess who's coming in for him? Domingo Herman, who was scratched from the start. Now, the Yankees are saying that, well, it was a medical issue that was cleared up just before the game after an examination. But, yeah, you know, I mean, the thinking right now in the Bronx is that nobody knows what the hell they're doing. The team's falling apart. It's old. You know, there's certainly more than a move away. And that just, I mean, that'll be a firestorm tomorrow.
Incredible.
In the Bronx. Yeah. There'll be a firestorm in the Bronx. The Baltimore Orioles, you mentioned they won tonight. They're 64-41. They've got a game and a half lead on the Tampa Bay Rays, who beat the Yankees 5-1. Toronto, we mentioned, losing to the Orioles. The Jays are 59-47. Boston and Seattle are tied right now out on the coast, and the Yankees are 55-50. There's still five games over 500, 3.5 back on the wild card, 9 back in the division. Caleb, before we get back to the phone lines, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of calls tonight by Jeremy Riggs. He did not have a great night, to say the least. And I was going to say it wasn't very good for both teams, but let's be clear. There were a couple of situations with the Jays.
Absolutely.
That boat bit particularly. Thinking of Alejandro Kirk's at bat in the seventh inning, a 2-1 pitch, was clearly a ball, called a strike. It's 2-2 instead of 3-1. Explain to me, I'm sure, obviously, people are going to say, Jeff, it's never good to be 2-2. You obviously, you'd rather be 3-1. But that particular pitch kind of flips the at-bat in its head, doesn't it?
Oh, no doubt about it. You go from being the aggressor to having to now go right on defense. And the OPS shift in that count is like 400 points. It's a lot. And that's a situation where Kirk's been swinging the bat well as of late in terms of the last 4 or 5 games. You feel like he's, you know, when you're in that aggressive mode as a hitter, now you start to really narrow in. You can find a certain spot, a certain pitch in a certain zone, and then you're trying to do damage. That's what you're trying to do in that situation. When it flips, now you've got to choke and poke. You got to try and find a way to make contact. And against, you know, a lefty that it reminds me a lot of Aaron Loop in that Kirk hit that, like, out in front little bender off of Loop just a couple days ago. You're looking at damage, and that one pitch right there just flips the entire AB on its side, and it happens so quick and it's so fast, and with the pitch clock, it just kind of turns over. It's easy to forget, but that's a huge swinging moment, and it wasn't the only one.
No, there were a couple of other called strikes, especially high, it seemed to me, which I don't know. Is that a reflection of the quality of the stuff that the Orioles were throwing up there? Because it was fast and it was hard.
Yeah, a lot of it is Riggs, and I've had him before, and he's a very, very good ball strike umpire. Usually very tight, does not miss around the zone. He's very, very disciplined, but sometimes you just got to give credit to the catcher back there. Yeah. You talk about stats and framing. I mean, Adley Rutschman's SL plus number is going to be through the roof tonight. I guarantee it'll be in the 130s, which is absolutely elite. And sometimes just the way certain guys receive certain pitches, the way that they present themselves, whether it's a big chest and kind of catching that high pitch underneath the mask, the top of the head is usually the place that umpires see that high pitch as they're looking right over the catcher's head. If it's close to the mask, they know it's probably a ball. You know, Rutschman, he's impressive back there. He's got multiple different stances. He really frames the ball well. It's not this big, huge sweeping motion. He does little 2-inch movements, and it's very deceiving. In an era where a bunch of guys are making these huge, massive 4-8, 10-inch movements, trying to pull a ball 4 inches outside and move it to the middle of the plate, I've talked to umpires. I talked to about 3 umpires about 5 days ago when I saw them in the airport, and I said, what do you got on all this framing? And they said, it's BS. We don't buy it. We know if you move the glove, you're telling us it's a ball. Adley Rutschman has a little 2-inch movement, and it can make pitches look really close. Sometimes you got to give credit to the catcher, too. He was framing the ball really well. But it flips the AB totally upside down and turns the offense into defense in their attack mode. And when you get into an advantage count, that's when you start to really do damage. You fight the entire AB to get into an advantage count. And then in the blink of an eye, when you take a good pitch, it is pulled, the rug's pulled right out from under you. It's deflating and it's defeating. And because of the pitch clock, you barely have time to even reset, because you're going, okay, that was a ball. I'm in 3 mode. Now I'm going to look strike. And you're going, oh, crap, now I got to protect, and it just happens so fast.
And what do you think? Poor Alejandro Kirk, all he's heard for the past month or so is don't swing at it if you can't hit it.
Exactly.
And he's done everything he can to put himself in a position, and the umpires take it away from him. Chris Bassett was asked after the game about the in-game adjustments he was forced to make. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
I changed grip a little bit on my sinker to get a lot more depth on it. We were changing planes basically to try to counteract some stuff that they were doing. Like I said, they have a great team. They have a great team approach when it comes to facing me. And it's just we have to make some adjustments. And I think we have the ability to do that, but not just go back to the drawing board and put a new approach in play.
Well, it is July 31st.
And the game is about adjustments, but the key there for me is we.
Yeah.
It's we. And I could be wrong. Maybe he was just disgusted with what he didn't have, which was location, which, I mean, you talk trying to change the grip on a sinker. He's been around long enough. He can do that. That's not the issue. The issue is just sequencing his pitches, getting into the flow. And if you don't have communication and you can't get on the same page in terms of that, here's press the button, the catcher presses the button, the pitcher nods on the first try, step up, now you've got plenty of time. It's just a distraction. And anything that distracts this guy from totally focusing on locating is no good.
The Toronto Blue Jays lost the first game of this four-game series against the Baltimore Orioles 4-2 tonight. They had the winning run up at the plate twice with two on and couldn't deliver. Andrew and Sherbrooke. Quebec, hey, you want to talk about the Jays' approach?
Can you hear me?
Got you loud and clear.
Awesome. Well, I hope you're both having an awesome evening. And I would like to take a little bit more of a positive note.
That's why we saved you for the end.
Well, it felt like a much more, I don't know, it felt like a much more positive game. I know we left a lot of meat on the bone, but.
Yeah, and a lot. Well, 0-for-10 tonight with runners in scoring position.
2-for-16
yesterday.
Though.
That's 2-for-26, man. That's not meat and a bone. That's a tomahawk steak. You know,
oh boy. Yeah. Well, thanks for reminding me. But at the same time, you know, it felt a little more competitive than some of the games against the Orioles this year. I'm going to take this a little bit in a slightly different direction.
All right.
Though.
Yep.
The big O has been the question. I don't think he's going to be traded before the deadline. Like, I don't think that's possible, but very, very long shot. Any chance the Jays go out on a limb? I mean, Rogers is putting all this money into the stadium, and it's beautiful.
Yes.
I think Shohei, from a sociological perspective, there's a Canadian element that might appeal to him. Is there any chance that we try to package up an Otto, a Ricky, and a lot of the other young prospects the Jays have in the pipeline? And
I mean, part of the issue is the Angels aren't trading Shohei Ohtani because the Angels still think they're in it. Yeah, no. I mean, that's
ship
the
is
only
sale.
Way. The only way I could. I mean, I'll tell you what. When he's a free agent,
maybe.
I would love to see this organization at least make a play for him.
Absolutely.
I think every organization in baseball has to at least make that call. I mean, just take a look at the TV numbers and games he plays in Japan. Take a look at the advertising around the stadium, the Japanese language advertising around stadiums when he's on the road as well. But no, the Angels have pulled Shohei Ohtani off, and I mean, the Jays' two best pitching prospects have been hurt most of the year. And there's just, there's not enough depth. There's not enough depth in this system to get a deal like that done. And I also, you know, we had Jason Stark on today. Part of me also on our show today, part of me also thinks, I don't think you're going to see a Juan Soto or a Trey Turner move this year. It's just, what did Ben say? 21 teams are within 5 games of playoff spots tonight.
Yep.
and the teams that aren't, is there anybody in Kansas City's lineup you would take?
Exactly.
Maybe Sal Perez, but I mean.
Oakland.
Like, Detroit. Anybody in Detroit's lineup you take? Probably not. Anybody move the needle there? No. Some relievers, but in terms of position players, There really isn't anybody there who would move the needle. By the way, the Blue Jays fell to 7-21 versus the AL East. That's tied for the worst record in franchise history through the first 28 games within the division, joining the 78 and 79 seasons. So I wish I could come up with something more optimistic than that. Oh, I can. They'll do it again tomorrow. There's three more games left in this series. The Jays take three or four games. We're forgetting about tonight.
That's right.
Caleb, thank you for hanging in. Appreciate it.
You got it.
For Caleb Joseph, I'm Jeff Blair. And for the rest of us here at Blue Jays Talk, thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. Now that summer has arrived, it's road trip season. Make sure your vehicle is protected from rust with Crown. Visit crown.com for a special summer offer today. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection.